All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules and maybe Lady Pitbull here on UCY.TV. Good morning, everybody. How are you doing on this, at least here, rainy, cold, gray Wednesday morning? It's only about 48 here. It was drizzling and dark and nasty yesterday. It really has been like the exact type of weather that you would just rather close your eyes, roll back over, and go to bed, which is what I was anticipating this morning. So you better be feeling pretty lucky that I made it. Honestly, I was feeling like it. I made the mistake of starting a fire last night, and I always forget that every time I start a fire, I don't know, I think it's the particulate that is in the ash. It just it causes me major respiratory distress. So, yeah, not feeling as hot as I could have been had I not started a fire, but wow, it was nice and toasty warm. So that's the struggle, and especially when it starts to get blizzardy like it does up here in upstate New York. Fires are just so awesome. All right. Well, I don't know if LPB is going to be here today. I believe Zori is offline, so that must mean she's sleeping. So what we could do today, if you would like, is continue from what I've been doing the last, oh, I don't know. Are you sick of me yet? I think it was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I wasn't here Monday. Tuesday. So that's 4 days. So we're going to hit day number 5 of me doing the extended version of the show. Let me open a couple windows here, though, so we can get the multifaceted view using my powers of observation, multi-window observing. We were on a big GMO 2.0 RNAi connect the dots back last week, and I had probably another 10 or 12 links. Oh, it looks like even more than that, maybe 15. Links of things that were down that vein. And I mean, they weren't necessarily GMO and RNAi, and I don't think mentally I really have the capacity to get into super deep scientific crap today. But what we can look at is some more of the horrifying news. Bill Gates, I had started talking about this yesterday right at the end of the show about them, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation joining forces, and I don't know what the connection was here, so we'll have to look at this, but with this pharma company called Amgen, I want to see too, I thought, yeah, there was $50 million that they had donated to the Ebola epidemic. You know, notice how things are getting really quiet now about Ebola. And it's making me wonder, is there something else coming, or is there a reason that they're getting really quiet about it? Like, we are coming up on literally this 20-plus day window where if there's going to be a lot more cases, they're going to start happening now. Right? I mean, my family was here just a month ago, so that's 30 days, and the Ebola epidemic had started, and it started way back at the end of 2013. We started talking about it in March, but when you heard that the first doctor had gotten it and they were sending him to the United States, it was a little bit before then, so it really hadn't gotten kind of hairy yet. But they just released yesterday, I think I'd read 51 people out of, and there was 100 and some in that watch group from Dallas, from Duncan. We had two sick nurses, I believe, right? There was that Fenn, and then there was the other lady who went all the way to Ohio and back. The one lady they transferred to Maryland, to the National Institute of Health, I think that was Fenn. And she, I saw last night, she actually seems to be doing better. Her condition was upgraded. But I'm just saying, pay attention right now. Things got really quiet about it. And they had been saying that that 21-day incubation period, they're not really too sure about that. It might actually be like 42 days or something. In which case, put on a seatbelt, because that's coming up really soon. But what we had spent a lot of time on yesterday was looking at the money trail and as to how these companies, and we read some of that, and you know what? Actually, that's where we left off. It takes me a while, guys. I'm only on like a quarter cup of coffee. And I was expecting to have somebody on with me today, which means that I am not too worried about being mentally spry to start the show. So, surprise! I just have to remember the name of the page. Hold on, let me think. It's Before the First Cup. Yes, it is. It sure is. Oh, yeah, I was reading this other thing. I started doing research after the show yesterday and came upon some more horrifying information. You know, it's just some days it just gets to the point where I just can't deal with this anymore. I really just want to crawl into my dog with Snuggie and clean my house and cook some food and sit by the fireplace and just chill out. I hate doing this every day. I really do. This isn't fun. This hasn't been fun for a long time. This was fun when I was investigating UFOs. This is not fun documenting the decline of Western civilization. It just is not fun. I wish I had like a double dose of coffee right now. See, and I don't think I even got to read any of this story. We read that other story by National Geographic yesterday that was very extensive. By the way, Merck is down today. They're still at $55 a share. Shimerix is at $29.97. Techmira is at $19.29. And they're the GMO tobacco people. I'd say that would be a buy. I would not invest in those people. Well, maybe. I don't know. Maybe we could turn over a buck and hope that Ebola goes wild. Isn't that called disaster economics? I think it is. All right. Ebola drug race ramps up in earnest. We're going to read this one. This is the one from a few days ago. 3 days ago. From, believe it or not, lefty MSN. But I had to kind of laugh just at how this was worded. And I don't even know if I want to deal with Ebola today, but I guess just to finish up where we were yesterday, and then maybe we'll hop on to something else. It looks like, is ISIS, ISIL? I heard, actually, they were changing their name again. Really? is ramping things back up again. So it's time for the whack-a-mole terrorist of the week. I saw there was some new terror group now that just appeared in Yemen, which is really exciting. We should have terror parties. Like every time they come up with a new name, we should have to drink. we used to play that Star Trek game. We'd watch a Star Trek episode, and every time they'd start spewing techno babble, either Geordi or Data, they'd be spewing techno babble and we'd all have to drink. By the end of the episode, 1 hour episode, we'd all be half in the bag. All right. Ebola drug race ramps up in earnest. When it started developing an Ebola drug in 2010, I read the beginning of this right at the very end of the show. So anyone who heard it, yeah, it's going to echo like you heard it before. But I want to illustrate to you just how messed up this is. Because we've been saying this since the beginning. And now it seems that, oh, yeah, everybody finally caught up to us. For the longest time, they were so off the mark. But it's come out like in your face now that that's exactly what they were doing. When it started developing an Ebola drug in 2010, Techmira Pharmaceutical Corp. wasn't counting on finding infected humans to test in. Of course they weren't. Instead, the company planned to seek approval based on animal studies, which regulators sometimes allow. Now the current outbreak in West Africa is presenting Techmira and other drug makers with thousands of potential patients desperate for treatment. Now, based upon that statement, would you not think that Techmira's stock would be going up? Oh, look at it is. Now the current I'm reading this again. Now the current outbreak in West Africa is presenting Techmira and other drug makers with thousands of potential patients desperate for treatment. What do they call that? Supply and demand. When the demand is high, the price can be high. You don't have a lot of competition. This is like a stockbroker's wet dream. And a pharmaceutical company's wet dream. Wow! Thousands of potential patients desperate for treatment. And remember, we read in one of the other stories that the reason why there hasn't been a vaccination for Ebola is because there have only been a few hundred cases a year. So there wasn't any money in it. But now, look at, I think I counted 18, something like that. There was a map of all these bio, all of these genetic companies working on these RNAi solutions to diseases. I think I counted 18 of them. And this was just on a little map thing. I bet you there's a lot more as well. You know, there's a lot of these European countries that are working on stuff also that we don't know about. All right. So, again, now with the current outbreak in West Africa, is presenting Techmira and other drug makers with thousands of potential patients desperate for treatment and setting off a rush among companies and health officials to find anything that might work. We are now faced with a situation that none of us ever anticipated, and that is the possibility that you could collect efficacy data in actual humans, said Mark Murray, chief executive of Techmira, a 100-person firm based in Vancouver, Canada. He is like so excited. We can collect data in humans. We actually have human guinea pigs. And because it's an emergency, they're going to let us inject people with this untested technology. There are no drugs on the market today designed specifically to treat Ebola. Without one, doctors in West Africa have largely been treating patients' symptoms, which include fever, vomiting, and diarrhea, and trying to replace the body's fluids they lose. Several Western and African patients have been given experimental treatments, including from Techmira, MAP Biopharmaceuticals, which is that ZMAP, and Chimerix, which is that Brindicafor CMX001. We talked about that. with the hope that they might be effective. The companies are rushing to increase production of these experimental drugs and to expedite clinical trials in infected patients. Other drug makers are scanning their chemical libraries for drugs that might attack the Ebola virus. Some doctors have tried giving infected patients the blood plasma of people who have recovered from the disease because it contains antibodies that could help fight the virus. The National Institute of Health, the Food and Drug Administration, and other parts of the Department of Health and Human Services are helping to coordinate and fund the efforts, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has pledged $50 million to support emergency efforts to contain the epidemic, including investments in drugs, vaccines, diagnostics, and blood plasma. You know what? I know I had a video clip. Let me find it. I have a playlist set up for Ebola on pigmynews.com, and I think actually, and we just, the channel is newer because Five got taken down at the end of the summer by YouTube. And so Six is probably from August, I think, the end of August. And if you go to pigmynews.com, you'll see police brutality, ISIS, ISIL, Ebola outbreak. Look at that. Fukushima. I don't know if the 2014 videos are up there yet, but 2011, 2012, and 2013 for Fukushima are all sorted by date. I've been seeing some horrifying news. They're coming out now going, oh, everything has been so way underreported. It actually, I saw something yesterday. It's way, 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 way bigger than Chernobyl, which, of course, we also knew at the very beginning. But, yeah, there are signs in some of those original videos that things are not good. So if you have any interest in that or are looking for proof. But anyway, pigmynews.com, the Ebola outbreak page. I think this has ended up so far being the biggest playlist. I think there might be over 400 videos already. I have it set up to auto sort. And then if I see like the oddball one that maybe doesn't have a keyword in the title, I'll go add it. But this is just searching for like Ebola and outbreak and whatever in the title. And there's over 400 of them. So there was a story about Billy Gates. Billy Gates. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it here. It's a hell of a lot easier trying to find it just on this one page with all Ebola news than it is to try to find it on a Facebook page. And, oh, by the way, if you guys remember in the very beginning of when we first started talking about Ebola, I had mentioned that in my research in the past, I had looked at ultraviolet light as a way to decontaminate. And I was not sure, because based upon the micron size of the pathogen, I know at least for filters, like HEPA filters and whatever, you have to be careful because a lot of the HEPA filters are 0.3 microns versus 0.1 micron, or maybe it's a 0.03, I don't know. Whatever. Look at HEPA filters. You'll see that they're all different sizes for the whole size on the filter. So contaminants or contagions won't always be stopped by, even if you had a good filter, if that virus or bacteria or whatever you're trying to fight is much smaller than the holes in the filter. But I had once postulated on air that I knew at least for water pathogens, they had these things, I'd seen them before, called steropens, and it was using UVC to kill the pathogens in the water. And it was just like this little wand. I think it had like two AA batteries in it, and you stuck the wand into the water and you pushed the button, and it used ultraviolet light to kill the pathogens. Well, I had wondered if anything like that, because I had seen these air purifiers that had UV on it, as well as like ozone generators and HEPA filters and whatever. Well, in my research, I really couldn't find anything about Ebola. I mean, it's not like something that they advertise for air purifiers with ultraviolet. Oh, yeah, we kill Ebola. But guess what I found? Hold on. I had maybe thought that it might work, and apparently, and I need to, oh, just a lot of coordination when you're tired. Turn it off. Turn it off. Okay. I had found that apparently they are using something similar to what I had postulated might work. And I did see that there are some units out there that you can get that has UVC capability. All right, so here. This is the Ebola fighting robot. This isn't the one I was looking for, but we'll listen to this one because...
Gigi rolls into a hospital room, gets switched on, and pulsates ultraviolet light its makers at Xenix describe as 25,000 times brighter than the sun. Hospital workers clear out to avoid eye damage. The robot's blasts hit everywhere, under the bed, creases, and curtains, more effective than just buckets of bleach applied by hand.
We can sterilize, we can disinfect, we can clean rooms to like an 85% level, but with the use of light, we can clean that room to 99.9%. So the organisms in the room, viruses, bacteria, spores, we can kill them with the light in areas we can't otherwise reach.
The light doesn't zap viruses out of humans. In a little more than 5 minutes, it scrambles the genetic code of germs on surfaces, keeping them from reproducing, spreading.
The CDC estimates that 1 in 25 patients will contract an infection during their U.S. hospital stays. That's why hospital administrators are so excited about the prospects of Gigi.
St. Joseph's is one of 250 hospitals in the U.S. using a Xenix germ blaster. The hospital says calls are pouring in from other medical facilities interested in the robot.
Currently it's Ebola, but there are other emerging viruses. It'll soon be influenza. Last year it was Clostridium difficile, which, by the way, is still out there. So everybody wants to lower the organism count in hospital rooms. What we tell them is, this will do that.
So why not give workers goggles and use Xenix robots on germ-spreading havens, airplanes? The company vows it's working on it.
So in an airplane, it's certainly possible, as long as we're protecting the eyes, that we could use the UV robot, or the operator could certainly be protected if the plane were empty and basically push it up and down the aisle.
A Texas K-8 school got hit by a small staph infection outbreak on the football team last year. The school's head told CNN a pulsating robot killed the infections dead in their tracks. He also cracked, the bathroom was wonderful. After this skinnier R2-D2 lookalike cranked up the germ-assassinating UV light. Paul Verkammen, CNN, Los Angeles.
So what do you guys think of that? I mean, that sounds pretty awesome. I would say, I'm sure that they probably cost a fortune, but man, if you had money to invest in something like that, that would be a great little rental thing to have. I did find a model that is out there. They actually had it all over, and it's like this combo unit. It's got HEPA. It's got electrostatic. It's got an ozone generator, and it's got UVC for a couple hundred dollars. I honestly think that that's a great idea, especially since it kills all kinds of different pathogens. If I can find the chat here, I will drop this to you. Yeah, skinny R2-D2, that's what it looks like. There's the video, it's in chat. If anyone is looking for it who is not in chat, it was on the Ebola outbreak tab on Pygmy News called Meet This Ebola Fighting Robot. But it, you know, two of my favorite things, killing germs and robots. But yeah, I mean, why wouldn't they do something like that? You know, go do a plane. Why don't they just have something like that at night in a public bathroom? Burp, you know, you get the UVC light and it, I mean, obviously you probably want your janitor to, swipe the toilet seats down, give it a dose of bleach, but I mean, it'll even kill it in the air and whatever. I think we should definitely use something like that. He's absolutely right as far as the eyes, and you probably wouldn't want to be around it with your skin, but because the UVC, if I'm not mistaken, that was the one thing that Dane was talking about, Dane Wigington, with a lot of what's been going on with our ozone hole the past year or two, and why a lot of our vegetables haven't been doing too well, was because for the first time ever, UVC light was getting through to our lower atmosphere and wreaking some havoc, and it does kill things. I mean, did you hear what he said? It scrambles genetic code. And I mean, you know, the sun, that's what the sun does, right? The sun, the radiation in the sun, if you get too much, actually goes in and causes free radicals and scrambles your DNA up. And that's why cancers can form, is once you get these mutations and the cells reproduce, they're going to reproduce faulty cells that very possibly then could turn cancerous and go crazy. I think it would be concerning if it is really true that we have tons of UVC coming through into the lower atmosphere. I would definitely say that though the sun feels great, because it does. I mean, this summer I really tried to get a little bit of sun, but I never got burned. But I would definitely be concerned about what it might be doing to us if you know, our eyes especially. And one thing I noticed is when it's sunny out, I cannot go outside without sunglasses now. I can't really see. I mean, it's massive squint if I do. For killing pathogens in a hotel room, and especially in this case where we're having all of these antibiotic-resistant strains of things, I would definitely say that it would be a good tool for the arsenal. Now, speaking of antibiotic resistance, I never posted these yesterday. After the show, one of my friends was hitting me up with some messages and asked me if I'd seen a couple things in regards to executive orders that have been coming down. And I said, no, I must have missed these. Well, one was from September 18th, and this was a month and 5 or 6 days ago. Tell me if this isn't bizarro. No, I really haven't had time to look into this. I was extremely busy yesterday. And so I still had these pulled up to dig into, and I never got here because of that stupid credit card guy fraud. I'm doing that today. I am just so angry. Anybody who thinks that they could just bill people and not provide a service and then not provide refunds and, oh, what, overbill you and then keep the balance and tell you it's a credit for the next time you do business with them has got to be taken down. I'm not going to stand for it. It might only be $60, but the guy's really pissed me off. Oh, I put together some good stuff. I think I'm going to call the credit card company today and make sure that a description of what I'm sending to them gets logged into my account. Anyway, this was sent to me by my friend yesterday in regards to combating antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And all I can think is maybe it's antibiotic-resistant bacteria today. And tomorrow, who knows? But why would there be an executive order about combating antibiotic-resistant bacteria? Did anybody else miss this? Because I completely missed this. September 18th, 2014, on WhiteHouse.gov, under the press office for immediate release, executive order combating antibiotic-resistant bacteria. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, I hereby order as follows, King Obama. Section 1, policy. The discovery of antibiotics in the early 20th century fundamentally transformed human and veterinary medicine. Antibiotics save millions of lives each year in the United States and around the world. The rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, however, and we know all the reasons for this, overuse in humans, overuse in animals. The rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, however, represents a serious threat to public health and the economy. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention in the Department of Health and Human Services estimates that annually at least 2 million illnesses and 23,000 deaths are caused by antibiotic-resistant bacteria in the United States alone. Detecting, preventing, and controlling antibiotic resistance requires a strategic, coordinated, and sustained effort. It also depends on the engagement of governments, academia, industry, healthcare providers, the general public, and the agricultural community, as well as international partners. Notice how they like bring everybody under one big umbrella. Success in this effort will require significant efforts to minimize the emergence of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, preserve the efficacy of new and existing antibacterial drugs, which have been overused, and a lot of them ended up in your liver as they put that triclosan in. Did you know? Now I guess Colgate's taking it out. Did you know they were putting triclosan in Colgate? It's the Colgate whitening or whatever. Some of it didn't have it, but some of it did. Triclosan. You're putting that shit in your mouth. Preserve the efficacy of new and existing antibacterial drugs. Advance research to develop improved methods for combating antibiotic resistance and conducting antibiotic stewardship. Stewardship, like pass from one to another. Gotta love this one. Strengthens. I do have. Efforts in public health and agriculture. Develop and promote the use of new rapid diagnostic technologies. Accelerate scientific research and facilitate the development of new antibacterial drugs, vaccines, diagnostics, and other novel therapies. Maximize the dissemination of the most up-to-date information on the appropriate and proper use of antibiotics to the general public and healthcare providers. Work with the pharmaceutical industry. Ah, that is the key phrase. We've brought them into the fold now. Remember, I was saying that that's what this whole Ebola thing was all about. Was bringing the pharmaceutical and the agricultural with the big tobacco and the GMO crops all under the same umbrella as we've had the military, prison, industrial complex, as well as a lot of these big corporations like companies that make nuclear reactors, for instance. Guys, they're bringing it all under one umbrella known as pharmaceutical industry that you talk about and surveillance. Oh, and remember, Obamacare was voted not to be a medical health care plan. So it is not under any of the laws that Medicare and Medicaid were under to prevent fraud. More dots connecting. Accelerate scientific research and facilitate the development of new antibacterial drugs, vaccines, diagnostics, and other novel therapeutics. Maximize the dissemination of the most up-to-date information on appropriate and the proper use of antibiotics to the general public and healthcare providers. Work with the pharmaceutical industry to include information on the proper use of over-the-counter and prescription antibiotic medications for humans and animals. And improve international collaboration. Oh, Codex Alimentarius. And capabilities for prevention, surveillance, stewardship, basic research, drugs, and diagnostic development. The federal government will work domestically and internationally to detect, prevent, and control illness and death related to antibiotic-resistant infections by implementing measures that reduce the emergence and the spread of antibiotic-resistant bacteria and help ensure the continued availability of effective therapeutics for the treatment of bacterial infections. Combating antibiotic-resistant bacteria is a national security priority. Did you hear that? It's all under the guise of national security. Whether or not your antibiotics work. The National Security Council staff, in collaboration with the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the Domestic Policy Council, and the Office of Management and Budget, shall coordinate the development and implementation of federal government policies to combat antibiotic-resistant bacteria including the activities, reports, and recommendations of the Task Force for Combating Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria established in Section 3 of this order. Oh, well, let's read Section 3 of this order. Here's the next one, Section 3. Task Force for Combating Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria. There is hereby established the Task Force for Combating Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria to be co-chaired by the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of Agriculture, and HHS, which I believe is Health and Human Services. Membership, in addition to the co-chairs, so the Secretary of Defense is actually the first one listed here as part of the co-chair. In addition to the co-chairs, the task force shall consist of representatives from the Department of State, the Department of Justice, the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Department of Homeland Security. Now, you would think that this next one probably would have been one of the first ones on the list, but it's not. The Environmental Protection Agency. Oh, look, they're like number five on the list of, in addition to the co-chairs, they're not even like one of the co-chairs. Secretary of Defense is. The United States Agency for International Development, the Office of Management and Budget, the Domestic Policy Council, the National Security Council, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the National Science Foundation, you'd think that they would have been up there too, and such executive departments, agencies, or offices as the co-chairs may designate. Each executive department, agency, or office represented on the task force shall designate an employee of the federal government to perform the functions of the task force. In performing its functions, the task force may make use of existing interagency task forces on antibiotic resistance. So there's already existing interagency task forces on antibiotic resistance, but we had to come up with a new executive order putting the Secretary of Defense in charge because it is a matter of national security. Mission. The task force shall identify actions that will provide for the facilitation and monitoring of implementation of this order and the National Strategy for Combating Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria. Functions. By February 15, 2015, the task force shall submit a five-year national action plan, to the president that outlines specific actions to be taken to implement the strategy. The action plan shall include goals, milestones, and metrics for measuring progress. Hey, that's how they do it in the corporate world. As well as associated timelines for implementation. Yes, this is probably a Gantt chart. The action plan, as an engineer, I had to do that every time we put together a project plan. That's what that's called. The action plan shall address recommendations made by the President's Council of Advisors in Science and Technology regarding combating antibiotic resistance. Now, what I want to know is if we're submitting project plans for things, how come no one is ever held accountable when they fail at it miserably? When they've managed to suck lots of money and resources and put it towards something as a matter of national security, and then we find out the whole thing was corrupt and full of shit and they didn't do anything, or they were all using it to make themselves money. I don't know about you, but it sounds to me like this newfound cash cow of the pharmaceutical industry and pathogens and going public, and a lot of those pharmaceutical companies that are now working on Ebola vaccines, I mentioned yesterday or the day before, have all received DARPA money and Homeland Security money for developing drugs that'll protect us against quote unquote bioterror warfare. But lo and behold, then the companies go public and hey, their stocks go crazy once there's an outbreak. Sounds like another perfect crime. Within a, okay, this is so under functions. We read the first one about the action plan. Second, within 180 days of the release of the action plan and each year thereafter, the task force shall provide the president with an update on federal government actions to combat antibiotic resistance consistent with this order, including progress made in implementing a strategy and action plan, plans for addressing any barriers preventing full implementation of the strategy and action plan, and recommendation for new or modified actions. Annual updates include specific goals, milestones, and metrics for all proposed actions and recommendations, and the task force shall take the federal government resources into consideration when developing these proposed actions and recommendations. So does it say we have an open pocketbook? Taking the federal government resources. You got all these mad science labs that we could do shit with. That'll be fun. Kind of like Kurzweil when he first was appointed head of engineering for Google. And they started all working together on this global brain project with the National Institute of Health and all the universities that are funded by DARPA and all the mad scientists. Kurzweil came out and said, basically, I have an unlimited budget. Section 4, Presidential Advisory Council on Combating Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria. The Secretary of Health and Human Services, in consultation with the Secretaries of Defense and the Secretary of Agriculture, shall establish the Presidential Advisory Council on Combating Antibiotic-Resistant Bacteria. The Advisory Council shall be composed of not more than 30 members to be appointed or designated by the Secretary. Secretary shall designate a chairperson from among the members, and the advisory council shall provide advice, information, and recommendations to the secretary regarding programs and policies intended to preserve the effectiveness of antibiotics by optimizing their use. Advance research to develop improved methods for combating antibiotic resistance and conducting antibiotic stewardship. Strengthen, and we heard a lot of this earlier, strengthen surveillance of antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections. Prevent the transmission of antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections. Advance the development of rapid point-of-care and agricultural diagnostics. Further research on new treatments for bacterial infections. Develop alternatives for antibiotics for agricultural purposes. Maximize the dissemination of up-to-date information on the appropriate and proper use of antibiotics to the general public and the human and animal health care providers, and improve international coordination efforts to combat antibiotic resistance. The Secretary shall provide the President with all written reports created by the Advisory Council. What do you think about this? This to me is pretty telling as they set the stage with illnesses. Did you notice, like, we had the enterovirus and Ebola, and right before that, all those pathogens that were left out willy-nilly without a proper chain of command, stewardship, it would be called. Without proper controls in place, we got this all set up. We got to be scared, scared, scared of germs. And here it comes, executive order. T task force agencies shall, as appropriate, define, promulgate, and implement stewardship programs in other healthcare settings, including office-based practices, outpatient settings, emergency departments, and institutional and long-term care facilities such as nursing homes, pharmacies, and correctional facilities. Do you see this? They are weaseling the federal government into every aspect of our lives. They are now going to be in control of defining, promulgating, and implementing stewardship programs for antibiotics in all of these private agencies. I don't know about you, but a doctor's office, a lot of times, that's just a private practice. By the end of the calendar year 2016, Health and Human Services shall review existing regulations and propose new regulations or other actions as appropriate that require hospitals and other inpatient healthcare delivery facilities to implement robust antibiotic stewardship programs that adhere to the best practices, such as those identified by the CDC. What? Now, I don't know about you, but the CDC does not have my confidence after all this. And that dude that's in charge doesn't seem to have half a clue. I want to really be taking the lead from the CDC on this. Health and Human Services shall also take steps to encourage other healthcare facilities, such as ambulatory surgery centers and dialysis facilities, to also adopt antibiotic stewardship programs. By the end of the calendar year 2016, the Department of Defense and the Department of Veteran Affairs, which, do we really want to listen to the VA after that massive scandal that came before all the other things I just said? The Department of Defense and the Department of Veteran Affairs shall review their existing regulations and, as appropriate, propose new regulations and other actions that require their hospitals and long-term care facilities to implement robust antibiotic stewardship programs that adhere to best practices such as those defined by the CDC. Again, DOD and the VA shall also take steps to encourage their other healthcare facilities such as ambulatory surgery centers and outpatient clinics to adopt antibiotic stewardship programs. The task force agency shall, as appropriate, monitor improvements in antibiotic use through the what? National Healthcare Safety Network and other systems. Now, what is that? Is that this new database that we are all becoming a part of with our patient records? I'm going to search that one after we're done. The Food and Drug Administration and Health and Human Services, in coordination with the Department of Agriculture and the USDA, shall continue taking steps to eliminate the use of medically important classes of antibiotics for growth promotion purposes in food-producing animals. Now, I remember when there was something that came out about that very line item, that they were going to try to reduce the use of antibiotics in food animals, that they just give them all as a prophylactic, a preventative prophylactic. The USDA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the FDA shall strengthen coordination in common areas such as surveillance use of antibiotics and resistant patterns in food-producing animals, interspecies disease transmissibility. Uh-oh, there we go. Like fruit bats and Ebola. Like swine flu, like avian flu, and the research findings. The DOD, HHS, and VA shall review existing regulations and propose new regulations and other actions as appropriate to standardize the collection and sharing of antibiotic-resistant data across all of their healthcare settings. Strengthening national surveillance efforts for resistant bacteria, the task force shall ensure that the action plan includes procedures for creating and integrating surveillance systems and laboratory networks to provide timely, high-quality data across healthcare and agricultural settings, including detailed genomic, meaning they're going to make sure that they have them all gene sequenced, and other information adequate to track resistant bacteria across diverse settings. Oh, yes. And it can take all of this bacteria resistant or antibiotic resistant bacteria. And once they have the genomes all programmed up into their software, they can make them even more virulent like they did with things on the virus end of the spectrum. Like the 1918 flu or the bird flu times two. Turn them into bioweapons. Wow. To me, that sounds like a great plan. Oh, what? There's nothing about network security in here. So once you get them all on the network, they can easily be hacked. That sounds like a good idea. The network integrated surveillance systems. Notice how they mention that. The network integrated surveillance systems and laboratory networks shall include common information requirements, repositories for bacteria isolates and other samples, a curated genomic database, rules for access to samples and scientific data, standards for electronic health records-based reporting. Remember, I've been telling you that. Data transparency, budget coordination, and international coordination. I wonder if we're going to be part of that curated genomics database. Task force agencies shall, as appropriate, link data from federal government sample isolate repositories for bacteria strains to an integrated surveillance system, and where feasible, repositories shall enhance their sample collections and further interoperate data systems with national surveillance efforts. The USDA, the EPA, and the FDA shall work together with stakeholders to monitor and report on changes in antibiotic use in agriculture and their impact on the environment. Task force agencies shall, as appropriate, monitor antibiotic resistance in healthcare settings through the National Healthcare Safety Network and related systems, preventing and responding to infections and outbreaks. Task force agencies shall, as appropriate, utilize enhanced surveillance activities described in Section 6 of this order, which is what we were just reading, to prevent antibiotic-resistant infections by actively identifying and responding to antibiotic-resistant outbreaks, preventing outbreaks by transmission of antibiotic-resistant infections in healthcare, community, and agricultural settings through early detection and tracking of resistant organisms, and identifying and evaluating additional strategies in the healthcare community for effective prevention and control of antibiotic-resistant infections. Promoting new and next generation antibiotics and diagnostics. Now, I would be really interested to see what next generation antibiotics entail. Because I'm going to guess that if they're getting genomes of all of these different bacteria, and we got like stuff like this RNAi / GMO 2.0, it's all the same technology going on now for viruses. I'm going to guess that they have similar plans for bacteria. As a part of the action plan, the task force shall describe steps that agencies can take to encourage the development of new and next generation, key phrase, antibacterial drugs and diagnostics, vaccines, and novel therapies for both the public and the agricultural sectors, including steps to develop infrastructure for clinical trials and options for attracting greater private investment in the development of new antibiotics and rapid point-of-care diagnostics. Task force agency efforts shall focus on areas of unmet medical needs for individuals. Yes, didn't we hear that in a forward-looking statement yesterday about doing Ebola vaccines? The unmet need that there were thousands of people now that we're infected, and there is an unmet need that they're trying to fill because that means profit. Including those antibiotic-resistant bacteria the CDC has identified as public and agricultural health threats, together with the countermeasures it develops for biodefense threats, the Biomedical Advanced Research Development Authority in the HHS shall develop new and next generational countermeasures that target antibiotic resistant bacteria that present serious or urgent threats to the public health. Isn't this just amazing? We've now made antibiotic resistant bacteria a matter of national security and put the Department of Defense in charge of it. And we're hoping that now there's this unmet medical need that'll get private investments from pharmaceutical companies that we can give access to a genome database of all of these bacterias that are tied into the lab networks and the hospital networks where all the patient records reside. Did I not tell you that that's what this was all about? They are going to sell our data. Because we will be the guinea pigs. They'll be able to track all this. What food you're eating? Oh, okay, well, that's one that had some sort of, you know, antibiotic-resistant bacteria and blah, blah, blah. And now, you know, let's make sure we get them on this. And let's see what happens. They really think that someone's going to come at us with, like, MRSA and use it as a bioweapon? I mean, I guess it's flesh-eating bacteria. Not really very pleasant, and you can die from that. It causes necrosis. But out of all the things that we have going on, is that the A number one most important thing that you'd be cutting an executive order over? I don't know. I think I might be doing things a little bit differently if I was sitting in Barry's seat. The Public Health Emergency Medical Countermeasures Enterprise in Health and Human Services shall, as appropriate, coordinate with task force agencies' efforts to promote new and next generation countermeasures to target antibiotic resistant bacteria that presents a serious and urgent public health threat. Now, I'd be very interested because this says within 30 days of this order, and this was from September 18th, and today is October 22nd. So I would have to say that 30 days has now passed. Within 30 days of the date of this order. Sorry, my phone is ringing. I lost my place as I looked over. Within 30 days of the date of this order, the Secretary of State, the USDA, and Health and Human Services shall designate representatives to engage in international action to combat antibiotic-resistant bacteria, including the development of the World Health Organization Global Action Plan for antimicrobial resistance with the WHO, member states, and other relevant organizations. The Secretary of State, the USDA, and Health and Human Services shall conduct a review of international collaboration activities and partnerships, identify and pursue opportunities for enhanced prevention, surveillance, research and development, and policy engagement. all task force agencies with research and development activities related to antibiotic resistance shall, as appropriate, expand existing bilateral and multilateral scientific cooperation and research pursuant to the action plan. Wow. They really are like trying to tie all this in now because there was an outbreak of something and now this has to be a global effort and we got to put all of our databases together and we need to own all of your research because it's for the good of humanity to put it into our surveillance system. This order shall be implemented consistent with the applicable laws and subject to the availability of appropriations. We seem to have an unlimited pot of gold somewhere. The authority granted by law to an executive department or agency or head thereof and the functions of the director of the Office of Management and Budget relating to budgetary, administrative, and legislative proposals. Insofar as the Federal Advisory Committee may apply to the Advisory Council any functions of the president under this act, except for that of reporting to the Congress, shall be performed by the secretary in accordance with guidelines issued by the Administrator of General Services, signed Barack Obama, September 18th, 2014. What do you think of them apples? I just can't even believe that we have an executive order for this. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't need an executive order to tell me that stuffing antibiotics down my craw for a sniffle isn't going to help, number one. And number two, probably is what caused a lot of my issues that I had over the last 20 years by killing all of my probiotic intestinal flora. I could see maybe an executive order, which was one little section of that, about maybe reworking how antibiotics are used in farm animals. That sounds like a great idea, since we're getting a lot of those antibiotics unknowingly and unnecessarily. But the fact that they are using what is going on right now and the fear that they've created with this Ebola thing to then just cut an executive order that takes all of our health data and our drug data and the security of our medical facilities and everything and puts it under one big federal umbrella that the Secretary of Defense is in charge of. And, oh, we're going to get with the WHO, too, and make sure that all of our partners around the world are doing what we say as well and sharing their data with us. That should be pretty disturbing. I'm not really sure what to say to that. I just read that yesterday. There was another executive order that that same friend sent me that came out on July 31st of 2014. This one was really short. It was titled Executive Order, Revised List of Quarantinable Communicable Diseases. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and laws of the United States of America, including Section 264B of Title 42 United States Code, it is hereby ordered as follows. Section 1, Amendment to Executive Order 13295, based upon the recommendation of the Secretary of Health and Human Services in consultation with the acting Surgeon General. So I guess did they not like appoint a permanent one? Remember they'd asked Sanjay Gupta to be Surgeon General and he turned it down. I thought he was a great New World Order pick. In consultation with the acting Surgeon General and for the purposes set forth in Section 1 of Executive Order 13295 on April 4th of 2003, as amended by Executive Order 13375 of April 1st, 2005, Section 1 of Executive Order 13295 shall further be amended by replacing subsection B with the following. Severe acute respiratory syndromes, which are diseases that are associated with fever and signs and symptoms of pneumonia or other respiratory illnesses, are capable of being transmitted from person to person and that are either causing or having the potential to cause a pandemic or upon infection are highly likely to cause mortality or serious morbidity if not properly controlled. This subsection does not apply to influenza. So what does that say? Respiratory syndromes now that come with a fever and mimic maybe pneumonia or other respiratory illnesses, except for influenza, that can be passed from person to person will now also be on the list. They're unnamed, just symptoms to allow you to be quarantined. Now, some of these infections, like bacterial pneumonia, are bacterial. I don't know. I just find it interesting. It seems odd that with all the crap going on in the world, that we'd be making executive orders in the middle of this whole Ebola bullshit. And that's pretty much it. General provisions, nothing in this order shall be construed to impair or otherwise affect the authority granted by law to an executive agency or head thereof. Blah, blah, blah. And that's it. I definitely want to look up, maybe for tomorrow, we'll look up what those old executive orders were from April 2003 and April 2005. Notice both of those dates followed 9/11, and they were during the Bush term. So I can't wait to see what those said. One of the things I want to look at is they had mentioned that National Healthcare Safety Network. It's the first time I remember hearing about that, and I did a quick little search on that, and it appears that the CDC has a section on their website, National Healthcare Safety Network, acronym NHSN. The CDC's National Healthcare Safety Network is the nation's most widely used healthcare-associated infection tracking system. The NHSN provides facilities, states, regions, and the nation with data needed to identify problem areas, measure progress of prevention efforts, and ultimately eliminate healthcare-associated infections. In addition, NHSN allows healthcare facilities to track blood safety errors and important healthcare process measures such as healthcare personnel influenza vaccine status and infection control adherence rates. Now, that is another interesting little tidbit we just discovered. So this National Healthcare Safety Network, which was mentioned multiple times in that executive order from September 18th, that's going to bring global databases together for tracking and have this massive surveillance network is also currently being used to track vaccination status of healthcare personnel. How much of a stretch would it be? And they've also mentioned, too, the electronic health records as a part of this. How much of a stretch would it be to tie our electronic health records and our vaccination status to this national healthcare safety network administered by the Department of Defense as part of that task group? This is CDC, but as part of that task group, I would have to say that some dots just connected for me. Let me drop this to you guys. I think this is worthy of more research, to be honest. Enroll your facility here. Wow, this is great. Guidelines and recommendations, data and reports. About the NHSN, what is it? CDC's National Healthcare Safety Network is the nation's most widely used healthcare-associated infection tracking system. The NHSN provides facilities, states, regions, and the union, the nation, with the data needed to identify problem areas, measure progress of prevention efforts, and ultimately eliminate healthcare-associated infections. Now, here's the thing. Didn't we hear at the very beginning with that new UVC robot that a few flashes of light and it kills all the pathogens? I mean, I'm not going to say that hospitals do not have infection control issues. When I was in the hospital having my daughter and I was very sick, suffering from preeclampsia and out of control high blood pressure and failing liver and heart, and I was full of water, blown up like a balloon. It was pretty awful. While I was in the hospital, I ended up, well, two things. They told me after 3 days of drinking the water and sucking on ice cubes that they had Legionnaires in the system. And then I ended up getting a really horrible, I had to get a C-section. My daughter was not coming out sideways. And I ended up getting a horrible staph infection from the hospital that then it took me almost 3 months to recover from. But if they came up with a way to use some sort of UV technology to decontaminate, why would a lot of this be necessary? I don't like the fact that the federal government thinks that they should have their records, their hands on my personal health records. And one of the things I postulated in the past, and I haven't seen this here yet anywhere, and it really hasn't come out, but remember, Obama had said back in the gun control executive actions after Sandy Hook, there are like 53 of them or 43, that he wanted to be able to get rid of those pesky HIPAA regulations. Those are the privacy laws that kept your medical records private. Of course, he put it under the guise of, you know, we need to know if you have mental health problems and you're a gun owner. And since that's protected information, unless the police have a court order, we should just get rid of those. Well, I had a feeling that there were much more nefarious agendas underfoot. And one of them would be opening up this patient online patient database that they, the doctors and the hospitals, are being required to build about you so that any of these money grubbers can get their hands in there. Remember, R&D is on a budget line item, and any companies that are public and trading on the stock market, if they can show that they have cut their costs, that is a benefit to shareholders, and that means stock price goes up. And the 50% of the members of Congress that are all invested in these companies make lots more money. All right, back to this National Healthcare Safety Network. The NHSN provides medical facilities, states, regions, nations with data collected by reporting capabilities needed to identify infection prevention problems by facility, state, and specific quality improvement project. Benchmark progress of infection prevention efforts. Comply with state and federal public reporting mandates and ultimately drive national progress toward the elimination of HAIs. Now, it would have helped had they told us what HAIs, healthcare-associated infections. There we go. Beginning decades ago with 300 hospitals, the NHSN now serves more than 12,000 medical facilities tracking hospital-associated infections. Current participants include acute care hospitals, long-term acute care hospitals, psychiatric hospitals, rehabilitation hospitals, outpatient dialysis centers, ambulatory surgery centers, and nursing homes, with hospitals and dialysis facilities representing the majority of the facilities reporting data. Participation among the other facility types is expected to continue to grow in coming years. Well, it will now that there's an executive order. They're going to force their hand and make them all get on board as a matter of national security. While ensuring data security, integrity, and confidentiality, Well, I don't know, does that count anymore when it's now become a matter of national defense? The NHSN gives healthcare facilities the ability to see their data in real time and to share that information with clinicians and facility leadership, as well as with other facilities, such as in a multi-hospital system, and partners such as health departments or quality improvement organizations. Yeah, and what other individuals? Software as a service, selling your data to the biopharma, so now they can cut that R&D budget and use you as the real-time guinea pig. CDC provides the standard national measures for healthcare-associated infections, as well as analytic tools that enable each facility to assess its progress and identify where additional efforts are needed. In addition, the NHSN is the conduit for facilities to comply with Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services infection reporting requirements. In addition to benefiting from increased attention to hospital-acquired infection prevention, patients can use the NHSN data posted publicly on the Department of Health and Human Services Hospital Compare website. Patients are encouraged to visit the website to see how their local facilities are doing and discuss concerns with their healthcare provider. NHSN data is analyzed by the CDC and others to direct action for healthcare-associated infection prevention. Local, state, and national trends are used to identify emerging problems and areas of concern that need intervention and to measure progress in infection reduction against national, state, and local prevention goals. Now, remember, this is saying that it was last updated on November 6th of 2013. September 18th of 2014, an executive order was passed, including this, as part of their whole new plan. I would say let's keep an eye on this and see how this mutates now that it's become a matter of national security, and that the Department of Defense, the Secretary of Defense, is the chair, the head of this new task force. All right, that's enough of that. We are going to go back to the story that I started with, that MSM story. about how they're just so besides themselves that they never, ever believed in their wildest dreams that they would actually have human subjects to test all their untested new Ebola drugs on. Holy shit, this is so exciting. I'm going to start this again because I can't even, when I first read this, my mouth was open. When it started to develop an Ebola drug in 2010, Takmira Pharmaceutical Corporation was not counting on finding infected humans to test it in. Instead, the company planned to seek approval based on animal studies, which regulators sometimes allow. Now the current outbreak in West Africa is presenting Takmira and other drug makers with thousands of potential patients desperate for treatment. Remember what that is secretly saying, profit, profit, profit. And setting off a rush among companies and health officials to try to find anything that might work. We are now faced with a situation that none of us ever anticipated, and that is the possibility that you could collect efficacy data in actual humans, said Mark Murray, chief executive of Takmira, a 100-person firm based in Vancouver, Canada. There are no drugs on the market today designed specifically to treat Ebola, and without one, doctors in West Africa have largely been treating patient symptoms, which include fever, vomiting, and diarrhea, and trying to replace the body's fluids they lose. Several Western and African patients have also been given experimental treatments, including from Takmira, MAP Biopharmaceutical, which I said that was the ZMAC product, and the Chimerix, which was the Brindicafor, the CMX-001. The companies are rushing to increase production on these experimental drugs and to expedite clinical trials in infected patients. Other drug makers are scanning their chemical libraries for drugs that might attack the Ebola virus. Some doctors have tried giving infected patients the blood plasma of people who have recovered from the disease because it contains antibodies. The National Institute of Health, the Food and Drug Administration, and other parts of the Department of Health and Human Services are helping to coordinate and fund efforts. Oh, wow, these are the same people that are involved in that executive order. Oh, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has pledged $50 million to support emergency efforts, right, we read this, to contain the epidemic, including investments in drugs, vaccines, and diagnostics, as well as blood plasma. But while human studies of drugs and vaccines are getting underway, it isn't clear if the efforts will yield quantities of an effective therapy in time to make a big difference in the current epidemic. Health authorities instead are looking more seriously at survivors' blood plasma as a short-term solution. And hey, the World Health Organization has issued guidance on its use in patients in West Africa. The pharmaceutical industry has invested relatively little in Ebola research since the first known outbreak in human in 1976. Most outbreaks have been sporadic and limited in scope and have occurred in poor countries, limiting the commercial appeal of developing a treatment. But the current outbreak, the worst ever, has at least 4,400 deaths, and it has heightened the sense of urgency. The FDA commissioner, Margaret Hamburg, said that the agency has shifted more employees to help speed the development of drugs, vaccines, and diagnostics. We have been up in the middle of the night in order to make a product available on an emergency basis to infected patients in the U.S., she said. The agency is also helping shape the design of clinical trials. My hope is that we will be able to get some meaningful answers in time, which sadly is not going to resolve in the immediate near term. I think we certainly want to be better equipped for the next outbreak as well. Now, in one of these articles, by the way, and I don't know if it was in this one, but somewhere I had read that they are also talking that once they find something that might work, that they are thinking about a preventative vaccination, by the way, for Ebola. Meaning, if you don't have it, you get one. Even companies that have not been active in Ebola research are diving in. Merck and Company, of course, a company that has had corruption charges levied against them in countries like China, is screening its library of chemical compounds, including experimental antivirals, to see if anything could be effective, said Julie Ginderbergening, a former director of the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, who is now head of Merck's vaccine division. Oh, that's a new tidbit of info I did not know. A handful of companies have been working on Ebola treatments in recent years, building on government-funded research. That's what I was telling you, DARPA, that has sought to understand the virus's structure and vulnerabilities. An expert panel of the World Health Organization is deciding which of these treatments to test in a clinical trial in infected people in West Africa. A consortium including the World Health Organization, the University of Oxford, and others are currently identifying sites in West Africa for fast-track clinical trials with a £3.2 million grant from the UK's Wellcome Trust, and is W-E-L-L-C-O-M-E, and I believe Wellcome is a pharmaceutical company. One challenge: to identify a trial design that is acceptable to governments, regulators, clinicians, and patients with a deadly disease. The moral imperative now for all of us is to study these drugs in the best possible way in West Africa without further delay. And there you go, guys. R&D budget line item has been eliminated. And we are out of time. I don't know how that happened, but I got about 15 seconds left. Today is Wednesday, so make sure you stick around. We have Mr. Stokes and Mr. Blood up. And then Josh is live. So are Jonathan and Steven tonight. We have April and Verstein doing a show on Scientology. And then Nick and DP on at 11 with Anti-Media Radio. Make sure you guys stick around. Make sure you come back tomorrow, too. I will be here with bells on. And I think we can just finish this out and talk about it for the whole rest of the week, maybe. I have more to read. All right, everybody. Try to have a happy day. I hope it's sunnier and warmer where you are. Everybody take care.
Public health officials at two airports have been sent scrambling over Ebola scares. A child passenger en route to Chicago's O'Hare from Liberia reportedly started vomiting, was rushed to the hospital, and remains isolated for observation. And an adult passenger also traveling from Liberia had similar symptoms and remains hospitalized as well. And at Newark International Airport, a passenger from West Africa also exhibiting symptoms is now hospitalized in isolation. The feds now routing all passengers arriving from the Ebola hot zone through only five U.S. airports: Newark, JFK, O'Hare, Dulles, and Atlanta.
CNN has learned the Defense Department is preparing a military quick strike team that will go anywhere in the United States to help with any cases of Ebola that might arise. I want to bring in CNN Pentagon correspondent Barbara Starr. She's on the phone now. And Barbara, President Obama had said he wanted aggressive action. What are these strike teams designed to do?
Well, hi, Deborah. What we're talking about here is the Department of Health and Human Services this week said to the Pentagon, we may need help. And the Pentagon responded and now is in the process of assembling. Some are calling it a quick strike team. Some are calling it a rapid response team. Whatever you want to call it, this is a team for the first time of military medical professionals. They will go to Fort Sam Houston in Texas, get trained up within the next couple of days, and be ready to deploy if civilian health authorities, the CDC, whatever, says we need help in this particular location. They'll name a location. The team will be able to go there. The team, 30 people, is going to be made up of five doctors, 20 nurses and 5 so-called trainers, people in the military who are very highly trained in how to deal with this issue of personal protective equipment, how to be compliant with the procedures on how that personal protective gear is used so that healthcare workers are protected and more cases don't erupt from healthcare workers getting the virus. The team orders are to be ready to deploy anywhere in the United States within 72 hours of getting orders. So for the first time now, we've seen military people travel to West Africa to help there. But for the first time now, we're seeing things being put in place for military personnel to help here in the United States if and when they get the order to go. Deborah?
And Barbara, these 5 doctors, 20 nurses, and these effective compliance trainers, have they been trained to work together? Do they know what the response is supposed to be? And is this an area of specialty? Isn't that one of the criticisms, ultimately, that everyone is learning on the job?
Well, to some extent, absolutely. This has just all really emerged in the last hour or so that the Pentagon was putting this together. My understanding from the sources I've spoken to in the last several minutes is they will go to this military base in Texas very rapidly. They're identifying the people now. They will get trained up. They will very quickly learn to work together as a team. That is what the U.S. military does. And they do have people that know how to do this, how to basically respond rapidly in a crisis. But I think your point is very fair and very well taken. This country really hasn't dealt with this sort of issue before, recently at least, and so everybody's a little bit learning on the job. The military has one critical advantage, which is, people will tell you, is if this erupts into a full-blown crisis, they can assemble large numbers of personnel, equipment, aircraft, medical capability, and move it anywhere in the country very quickly that it might be needed. It's the one part of the United States government that can just really respond very, very quickly. And so they hope they're not going to get called into action, but they will be ready to go if they do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of a very big if. If more cases are diagnosed, the equivalent, effectively, of military boots on the ground. But Barbara, is there any suggestion as to where these doctors and nurses would operate out of? Would they be given hospital privileges, for example? Would they work in tandem with doctors who are treating individuals? Is this about quarantine? Have they given you any further? I know it's just new and you're breaking this news on our air, but is there any specifics of or logistics of how this works, what it looks like?
All I can tell you is, legally in the United States, the United States military, the active duty force, always, if they are called to do something in the United States, legally, they are always in support of civilian authorities, whether it's a city that may be having a flood or a state that's fighting a wildfire or a medical crisis that the federal government and state government are trying to fight. So they will be in support of civilian medical authorities. They will go, if they are ordered, where they are asked to go. This is, not to be flip about it. There's no military martial law in play here. But it is going to be quite interesting because, of course, civilian hospitals do have those separate issues of hospital privileges and their accredited personnel. I'm going to tell you, we don't know at this point exactly how all those issues will be worked out. But what we do know is over the last several days, as the president has been meeting with his advisors, all the portions of the federal government really have been told to look for a more aggressive response to the Ebola situation. And our sources are telling us that over the last several days, this is what the Pentagon and HHS, Health and Human Services, have come up with, that the Pentagon would have the ability to offer some additional medical capability and medical capacity if it's needed.
From the beginning of this outbreak, the CDC has insisted if someone gets Ebola, the symptoms will show up in 21 days or less. It is a cornerstone of their science. And yet the World Health Organization says not 21, but 42 days must pass before a country suffering an outbreak can be called Ebola-free. Why? The key difference rests in the idea of a single person versus a community. Whereas health officials say one person with the disease could indeed be expected to show symptoms within 21 days, if he or she transmits it to another, a whole new 21-day cycle begins with that next person. Still, where does that magic number, 21, come from? Researchers at Drexel University found the origin is murky, but it seems to have been derived from case studies of outbreaks in Zaire in 1976 and Uganda in 2000. The problem is the Drexel team also discovered that other outbreaks in other places have seen people coming down with symptoms past the 21-day cutoff.
Well, based on the prior outbreaks, there's up to a 12% chance of people becoming ill even after a 21-day incubation period.
It is only one study, but certainly others appear wary of the state of Ebola science. Syracuse University, for example, recently canceled a talk by a photographer who has documented the Ebola outbreak. Even though he had been out of the hot zone and showing no symptoms of the disease, well past the 21-day limit. Clearly, part of the problem is that there have been missteps in the handling of Ebola here. Jake, and you've seen this before. A few missteps feed this concern, feed this fear that maybe something is wrong in the basic science. And that's now becoming part of the equation.
All right.
For more news, visit pigmindnews.com.
This is Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.TV.